had my ups and downs, but it makes no sense to me to watch lots of times the wicked prosper and the good people suffer.
Why do you help certain people but neglect to help others? A while ago, my mom was actually hit by a car while running, and that kind of started getting me questioning, you know, why can a pro football player get a touchdown and thank God for it, but God can't stop a man from running my mom down on the side of the road?
So when I first moved to Hawaii, I had $40 to my name, no job, no place to live. You know, lived on the beach for a little while, and this couple, Leilani and Joseph, took me into their home, let me live with them. They gave me a job, and just some of the most beautiful people in the world. So, so kind, so giving. And they've been trying for, you know, about a year and a half to have a child, and she just had a miscarriage. And it just makes no sense to me that people that clearly, you know, would be such, you know, they give so much love and deserve so much to have a child. Like, how can you take that away from them?
It makes me angry. To be completely honest, it makes me very, very angry that only some people get the assistance that they actually need, which makes me question the reality of God. Is God really only helping a select few people and neglecting the rest of us?
Oh, goodness. You know, why would you put us here in the first place, you know? Why are you gonna put a bunch of humans on a planet and, you know, leave us to our own destruction? This life is stressful and it's painful and I'm very weary. I don't know, you know, why life has taken such a toll on me.
My question is, why did my stepdad have to die? My adopted father, why? I was a star athlete. He was part of my team. He was always a coach. My dad died. My first game after he died, I got on base. Took my lead off, look over at third. My dad wasn't there. I just sat down, started crying, had my hands, you know. Didn't go back. Haven't played since. I even ended up dropping out of school, you know, because I wasn't an athlete anymore. I don't see any way that that made my life any better than the direction it was headed. I don't understand. Why? Explain that to me, please.
Yeah, I definitely relate to that. My dad died about 10 years ago, and he was really young, and I have a lot of those same feelings and that same question, like, why my dad? Why then?
There's obviously a purpose behind everything, and you just gotta deal with it when it comes.
I've always imagined that he'd probably say something like, it's in my plan, which has never been, you know, a good enough answer for me. I would hope that he would tell me exactly why my mom getting hit by a car was a good experience for me to live through. You know, why my parents getting divorced and my father leaving for good was a good experience for me to live through. I want to know, why are you going to allow terrible things to happen to me if I'm going to devote my life to you? Those questions do make me doubt the existence of God. If this is what it means to be a Christian, I don't want that.
It's absolutely something that's touched every one of us if we're honest with ourselves. I'd say that if not all, most of us in this room have at one time or another experienced some kind of suffering, some kind of tragedy, some kind of loss that's impacted us deeply. All we have to do is look around the world and we can see pain, and tragedy, and suffering all around us. You know, if you watch the news for any length of time at all, you might hear about entire villages being massacred, untold numbers of women and children being ripped away from their families and sold into slavery. Just a few years ago, there was the brutal beheading of 21 Coptic Christians in Libya. In fact, in some areas where Christianity had endured for two millennia, it's now faded away. Why? Because they were forced to flee. They were compelled to convert, or they were put to the sword. Look even closer to home, and you'll hear about school shootings. Shootings in malls, military bases, other public areas have become almost commonplace. I remember vividly that warm October day in 1991. I was stationed in Fort Hood, Texas. I was awaiting my release. A buddy of mine decided, let's go down to the Luby's, the cafeteria down there, and let's eat lunch. And we got there, and we didn't know this. It was National Take Your Boss Out to Work Day, which October's coming up. anybody. So, but anyway, we went down there, and so the Luby's was packed. Inside, there was a line of people outside. So we decided to go over to Schlotsky's, grab a sandwich, go back to the base, and eat lunch. Later that day, we discovered that just minutes after we left, George Hennard, 35 years old from Belton, Texas, drove his blue 1987 Ford Ranger pickup truck through the plate glass window of that same Luby's cafeteria in Killeen, Texas. Just minutes after we left that parking lot. We also learned that after he drove his truck through that plate glass window, he then got out of his truck and he proceeded to shoot and kill 22 people that day. His 23rd victim died 3 days later in the hospital. It's a lot of horrific stories. So much pain, so many people have gone through. This causes many people to question or doubt God. People ask why. Why does he allow such horrible things to happen? And these tragic examples are in addition to the everyday pain and suffering that a lot of us experience in our individual lives, maybe including you. Maybe there's something going on right now in your life. Maybe there's an illness that's touched you or someone you love. Maybe it's cancer. Maybe it's ALS. Maybe it's MS. Maybe it's a heart disease. Maybe there's an injury that you've encountered and you've not been able to live the life that you've always dreamed of. Maybe there was abuse that's kind of jaded you from being willing to be open with others, to love others as deeply as you'd like, because you can't trust. You don't want to put yourself out there. Maybe you've been involved in broken relationships and betrayal, sorrow, disappointment, heartache. Maybe there was a crime that happened against you. Maybe it's been death. Maybe you've been touched by death on more than one occasion by the people closest to you. And perhaps you've been asking the question lately, why? Why me? Why now? Why God? Does this have to happen? And that why question goes back thousands of years. It's nothing new for us. It's thousands of years. It was asked in the Old Testament by Job and the writers of the Psalms. It's been repeated in our time. Two world wars, the Holocaust, genocide in the Soviet Union, genocide in China, genocide in Rwanda, devastating famines in Africa, the killing fields of Cambodia, the emergence of AIDS, and the ongoing acts of terrorism that happen all around the world. Why does all this happen? If there's a loving, all-powerful God, then why do bad things happen to so many good people? A number of years ago, a national survey asked what people would say to God if they had the chance to ask him just one question. Their number one response, why is there suffering in the world? Why do we have to suffer? But if you've never asked why, if you've never asked why the world's infected with pain, you will at some point. You will ask that question when pain hits you in a very real way, with all its force, when it strikes you or strikes a loved one. And Jesus said, they're coming. He gave us that promise. Unlike a lot of other religious leaders who wrote off pain and suffering as just mere illusions, just things that you think you're going through, Jesus told us the truth. He said in John 16:33, he said, in this world, you will have trouble. You will have suffering. You will have pain. He didn't say you might. He said it's going to happen. You can guarantee it. But why? And so if you were to hold me down and ask me point blank, why did God allow specific tragedies to happen in my life or your life? Why did God allow abuse to occur in my life? Why did God allow death to strike me at such early ages or whatever your question might be? Why, God? The only honest answer I can give you is this. I don't know. I don't know. I'm not going to pretend that I know. I can't stand in the shoes of God and give a complete answer to that question. And neither can you. I don't have God's mind. I don't see with God's eyes. The Bible says in 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 12, says this, "Now we see things imperfectly, like puzzling reflections in a mirror, but then we will see everything with perfect clarity. All that I know now is partial and incomplete." I'm like, thanks, Paul. I need that. That's the way I see things. Partial, incomplete. "But then I will know everything completely, just as God now knows me completely." So when you ask about specific events that happened to you specifically, and you want to know why a particular thing happened, listen, we may not get that full answer in this world. We may never know. Someday, we'll see with clarity, but for now, things are foggy, hazy. We can't understand everything from our finite perspective. And frankly, people who are suffering from a recent tragedy in their lives, listen, folks, they don't need a big theological exposition. As a matter of fact, they don't want it. Any intellectual response is going to seem trite and very inadequate to them. Sometimes the worst thing we can do is to start to get all philosophical with people who are in the midst of suffering. What they need initially is just a real and comforting presence of Jesus Christ in their lives. Usually we're better off, at least during their immediate season of grief, to use as few words as possible and to show more love. People don't need a lecture. They need a hug. They need a shoulder to cry on. But when we focus on the more general questions of why God allows suffering, there are some things that we can discover, some important things to say when the time is right, and that's the key, when the time is right. Don't be afraid of silence. When you're working with somebody or dealing with somebody who's just gone through some tragic event, don't be afraid to say, "I don't know." Be honest. But there will be a time. Time will be right. And even though we can't understand everything about it, we can understand some things about what they're going through. Let me give you an analogy that comes from author Lee Strobel. He's the former atheist whose story we looked at last week. Lee and Leslie, his wife, they were driving up the highway in the dark when they suddenly encountered a really heavy rainstorm, and then dense fog started rolling in with it. They could hardly see the white stripes on the road. But they couldn't stop. They were afraid if they stopped, pulled over, they'd get rear-ended by someone. So it was a very tense situation for them. But then a truck appeared in front of them, and they could clearly see the taillights on this truck. Now, the truck apparently had fog lamps, Lee said, because it was traveling at a very confident and a very deliberate speed. And Lee knew that if he could just follow those taillights, they'd be headed in the right direction. That's a lot of trust. And you know, the same's true in understanding why there's tragedy and why there's suffering in our lives and in our world. We may not be able to make it all out. We may not be able to see all the peripheral details of why something bad happens, but there are some key biblical truths, some points of light, some taillights in our future that can illuminate things for us, that can help us make sure we're following in the right direction, even though it seems like there's this big fog all around us. And if we'll follow those points of light, then I believe they'll lead us to the right direction, towards some conclusions that can help satisfy our hearts and our souls. If we reflect on these considerations before suffering comes into our lives, I think we'll be better able to understand and trust God through those inevitable trials. So what are those points of light? Well, let me go through five of them real quick that I believe can help us as we try and answer this question: why does God allow tragedy and suffering? And the first one is this. First, we need to know in our minds and in our hearts, okay, that God is not the creator of evil. God did not create evil. One question we hear so often is, why didn't God just create a world that where human tragedy and suffering never existed? And the one answer to that is this: He did. He did create a world like that. In Genesis chapter 1, verse 31 says this, God saw all that he had made and it was very good. God did not create a world with human suffering. But if God is not the author of human tragedy or evil or death, then where did it come from? It's the next logical question. So where does it come from? If God didn't do it, where does it come from? Well, keep in mind that God has existed from all eternity as the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit, who are united in a relationship of perfect love. So love is essential to the very nature of God. When God decided to create human beings in his image, he wanted us to experience real love. Love for God, but also love for one another. But to give us the ability to love meant God also had to give us the freedom to decide not to love. God didn't want robots. He wanted relationships. Why? Because genuine love always involves free choice. Genuine love always involves free choice. If we were programmed to say, I love you, it wouldn't really be love. Maybe you've seen a little baby doll like this before. And it's got that string in the back. Now, I got this out of our nursery, and I was like, Jason, I was looking for one with a string. He said, they purposely don't have strings. I'm like, I get it. I'm totally with you. But maybe you've seen it, and you pull the string in the back, and it says, I love you. It's not love. This is a doll that's been programmed to say something like that. It's kind of creepy sitting up here, so I'm putting it over there. But it's been programmed to say that. It doesn't say that because it feels love or it wants to love or it even has love. And that's not what God wanted with us. He didn't want a bunch of robots down here who had no choice, who could just only love him. That's not what he wanted. To experience genuine love, that doll would need the ability to choose to love or not to love. Again, real love always involves free choice. So in order for us to experience real love, God granted us free will. But unfortunately, we humans have abused our free will by rejecting God and by walking away from him. And that's resulted in the introduction of two kinds of evil. It's brought evil into this world in two different ways. And so let's look at those real quick. The first is moral evil. Moral evil results from the immoral choices that people make. When we choose to be selfish, when we choose to be arrogant and uncaring and hateful and abusive, suffering is a natural consequence. Listen, everything you choose to do has a consequence. Okay? Everything we choose to do has a consequence. Unfortunately, moral evil is something that affects all of us. Like driving a truck through a plate glass window and shooting and killing 23 people. It has a consequence. Romans 3:23, Paul reminds us, the Apostle Paul says, all have sinned and fall short of the glory of God. We've all contributed to moral evil, every person in this room, in one way or another. Here's another example. Look at your hand. Just look at your hand for a moment. Please. Look at them. With those hands, you can choose to do good or you can choose to do evil. You can choose to reach out and help someone, maybe offering them food or shelter or clothing or whatever it is that they might need. Or you can choose to harm. You can choose to hit. You can choose to shoot. You can choose to choke. You choose. It's unfair. It's really unfair. For us to use our hands in evil and then blame God. It's just unfair. There's an old cartoon that says, we have seen the enemy and he is us. The other kind of evil is this. It's called natural evil. This includes things like wildfires, earthquakes, tsunamis, and tornadoes and hurricanes that cause all kinds of suffering. And we've just experienced that. Out on the East Coast, man, they've been ravaged by that. Out on the West Coast, it's been wildfires. Hawaii just had all kinds of storms go through. We see this all around the world. None of us have probably forgotten the big tsunami that happened. But these tragedies, they're also an indirect result of human sin. Oh, come on now. Yes, they are. Genesis 3 makes it clear that the curse on creation is the result of human sin against God. Nature itself became corrupted. Thorns and thistles were produced. Pain entered the world. Genesis 3, women, why is there pain in childbearing? Because man sinned against God. I will greatly increase your pain. Human death entered the world. A brother killed a brother. In the New Testament, the Apostle Paul points to this ongoing consequence when he says in Romans 8:22, we know that the whole creation has been groaning, as in the pains of childbirth right up to the present time. In other words, nature longs to be made perfect once again. But for now, it's in a fallen condition. In a sense, when we told God to shove off, He partially honored our request. The earth was cursed, genetic breakdown and disease began to develop in people, and suffering and death became an unavoidable part of human experience. Let's make this crystal clear one more time. God did not create evil, and human suffering and death were never something God desired. That was not His desire. Now, it's true that God created the potential for evil. He allowed that to happen, to enter into the world, because that was the only way to create the potential for genuine goodness and love. But it was human beings using our free will who brought that potential evil into reality. Some people ask, couldn't God have foreseen all of this? Yes. And He did foresee all this. There's no doubt He did. But look at it this way. Many of us here today, not all of us, but many of us are parents, right? We've had children. Couldn't you foresee that your child might be a very real possibility that they would experience disappointment in their life? But you had a child anyway. Did you ever foresee that there might be heartache in your life over that child? Or that they might even hurt you? That they might walk away from you? They may abandon you? Of course. Of course that's a reality. But you decided to have kids. Why? Because you knew there was also the potential for tremendous joy, deep love, wonderful relationship. Maybe some of you wanted to give kids something you never had, that you never experienced. Now, that analogy is far from perfect. I understand that. But think about God. He knew with certainty that we would rebel against Him. But He also knew that many people would choose to follow Him, to have a loving relationship with Him. Ultimately, it was worth it to God to create us with human freedom, even though He also knew it would cost Him a great price. It would cost His own Son. And He would go through pain and suffering and even death to make us right with God again. So as we ponder the mystery of evil, I hope it's helpful to be reminded that God did not create it. Second thing, let's move on. Though suffering is not good, God can use it to accomplish good. How does this, he does this by fulfilling His promise in Romans 8:28. In Romans 8:28, He says, Paul wrote these words, and we know that in all things God works for the good of those who love Him, who have been called according to His purpose. Well, I love God, but why am I going through all this? Listen, the verse does not say God causes evil and suffering. That's not what the verse says. Just that He promises to cause good to emerge. And notice that the verse doesn't say we all will see immediately. And even in this life, how God has caused good to emerge from a bad circumstance. That's not the promise. Remember, we only see things dimly in this world, with a haze, with a fog. Also notice that God does not make this promise to everyone. It's not a promise to every person. He makes the solemn pledge that He will take the bad circumstances that befall us and cause good to emerge if, it's a conditional clause, we're committed to following Him. The Old Testament gives us a great example in the story of Joseph, who went through terrible sufferings. He was sold into slavery by his own brothers. Can you imagine that? He was unfairly accused of a crime. I was listening to the radio the other day, and if what was said is true, it's terrible. But it's an allegation. And people jump all over allegations today as though that's guilt. Well, I can accuse any one of you of something, and you can accuse me of something, but does that mean it's true? No. I thought we lived in a country where we're innocent until proven guilty. That's not where we are today. We're guilty until we prove our innocence is the way we live today. Thank you, social media. Also, notice God does not make this promise. He doesn't make it to everyone so that it's clear for all of us. Joseph, like I said, sold into slavery, accused of a crime, he was falsely imprisoned. And after a dozen years, he was put in a role of great authority where he could save the lives of his family and many others. And after all that, here's what he said to his brothers in Genesis 50, verse 20. You know what he said? You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good. And he even gives the explanation. Why? To accomplish what is now being done, the saving of many lives. If you're committed to God, then this is encouraging. It should be encouraging to you. He promises that he can and will take whatever pain you're experiencing and draw something good from it. Now you might say, well, not in my circumstance, man. You just don't know what I've been through. The harm was too great. The damage was too extreme. The anguish of my suffering, it's too deep. There's no way in my case that God can cause any good to come out of what I've been through. But if you doubt God's promise, seriously consider this thought. God took the very worst thing that has ever happened in the history of the universe, the horrific and undeserved death of the innocent Son of God on the cross. He took that and turned it into the very best thing that ever happened in the history of the universe. And so if God can take the very worst circumstance imaginable and turn it into the very best situation possible, can he not take the negative circumstances of your life and create something good from them? Oh, I believe he can. I believe he can, and I believe he will. God can use our suffering to draw us closer to himself. That's the best thing for any of us. To mold and to sharpen our character, to realize our reliance on him, and to influence others for him. He can draw something good from our pain in a myriad of ways. If we patiently, if we persistently trust and follow him. Here's the third thing. The day is coming when suffering will cease and God will judge evil. The day is coming when suffering will cease and God will judge evil. A lot of times you'll hear people say, if God has the power to eradicate evil and suffering, then why doesn't he go ahead and just do it? The answer to that is because he hasn't done it yet. Doesn't mean he won't ever do it. It's like reading a novel. Someone read only half of a great novel and then slammed it down and said the author did a terrible job with this book. There are too many loose ends and with the plot and he didn't resolve any of the issues with the characters. I'd say, hey, you've only read half the book. Well, the Bible's the same kind of way. The Bible says that the story of this world isn't over yet. It says the day will come when sickness and pain will be no more. It'll be eradicated and people will be held accountable for the evil they've committed. Justice will be served in a very perfect way. That day will come, but it's not here yet. So what's holding God up? What's keeping him from doing this? One answer is that some of you may be one of the reasons for God's delay. You and your relationship with God or your lack of a relationship with God. Perhaps God is actually holding off the consummation of history to give you more time to put your trust in him. It's possible. Maybe God is delaying things because of his love for you. Don't believe me? That's fine. Well, let's look at Peter. Peter, the one who denied Jesus three times and Jesus still sought him out. In 2 Peter chapter 3, verse 9, Peter writes this, "The Lord is not slow in keeping his promise, as some understand slowness. Instead, he's patient with you, not wanting anyone to perish, but everyone to come to repentance." Maybe that's why God is delaying in returning. He wants everyone to come to repentance. To me, that's compelling evidence of a loving God that he would care that much for you and those you love to give you a little more time to come to know him. But listen, here's the reality. Don't wait too long. The return of Christ may not be today, but it could be. May not be tomorrow, but it could be. We may not make it out of here and him return. We don't know. It's that uncertain as to when he will return. So don't delay. Fourth point of light, number four. Our suffering will pale in comparison to what God has in store for us as his followers. Our suffering will pale in comparison to what God has in store for us as his followers. I certainly don't want to minimize pain and suffering. I don't. But it helps if we take a long-term perspective approach to it. Look at it. Look at this verse and be aware that it was written by the Apostle Paul. Okay? We're going to put a verse up here in just a second. It's written by the Apostle Paul. He experienced beatings. He experienced stonings. He was shipwrecked. He was imprisoned. He was rejected. He was hungry. He was thirsty. He was homeless. And far more pain came upon him than we will ever face. And yet these are his words in 2 Corinthians chapter 4, verse 17. Paul said this, "For our light and momentary troubles." Paul, really? Shipwrecked, homeless, beaten, starving. Light and momentary. Five different times Paul's back was shredded by being flogged with 39 lashes of a whip. Three times he was beaten to a bloody pulp, left for dead. The guy was shipwrecked. He was bitten by a snake. And yet he says, "For our light and momentary troubles are achieving for us an eternal glory that far outweighs them all." That's a great promise. Paul also wrote in Romans 8:18, he said, "I consider that our present sufferings," listen, he suffered with you. "Our present sufferings are not worth comparing with the glory that will be revealed in us." What a perspective. Think of it this way. Let's say that on the first day of this year, you had an awful, terrible day. You had an emergency root canal and the dentist ran out of painkiller. Imagine that. You crashed your car and you didn't have insurance. Your stock portfolio took a nosedive. Your spouse got sick, terminally. A friend betrayed you. From start to finish, it was like the title of that children's book, Alexander and the Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Day. Just imagine that. But then, every other day of the year turns out to be incredibly terrific. Everything goes the way you want. Your relationship with God is close and real and very intimate. A friend wins the lottery and he gives you $100 million. I want a friend like that. You get promoted to your dream job. Time magazine puts you on the cover as person of the year. You have your first child, they're healthy and everything's great. Your marriage is just ideal. Your health is fabulous. You get a 6-month vacation to Tahiti. Everything's just going your way. And the next year on New Year's Day, someone says, "How was your year?" And you go, "Man, it was great. It was wonderful." And they say, "But didn't it start off bad? Didn't you go through a lot of trouble on that first day?" And you think back and say, "You know, you're right. That really was a bad day, no denying it. It was extremely difficult. It was hard. It was painful. But when I look at the entire year, when I put everything into context, it's been a great year. The 364 terrific days far outweigh the one bad day. By comparison, that day sort of kind of fades away." I believe that's a good analogy for what believers will experience for all eternity with God. Listen, this is not to deny the reality of your pain in this life. It might be terrible. It might be chronic. Maybe you're suffering from a physical ailment or heartache at this very moment. But in heaven, listen, after 654,484,540 days, that's over a million years, of pure bliss, with infinitely more days of bliss yet to come, if someone asks, "So, how's your existence been?" I think you'd instantly react by saying, "It's been absolutely wonderful." Words can't describe the joy and the delight and the fulfillment. If they said, "But didn't you have a tough time?" before, you'd probably think back and go, yeah, it's true. Some of those days were painful. I can't deny that they were difficult. In fact, they were really, really bad. But when I put them into context, in light of all God's outpouring of goodness to me, those days, those bad days aren't even worth comparing to the eternity of blessing and joy that I'm now experiencing. I know you can't imagine that maybe right now in the pain that you're in, but try. It's like a story British church leader Galvin Reed tells about meeting a young man who had fallen down a flight of stairs as a baby, shattered his back. He'd been in and out of hospitals his whole life, and yet he made the astounding comment that he thinks God is fair. And so Reed, this pastor, asked him, he said, "How old are you, young man?" And he said, "I'm 17. Well, he said, "How many years have you been in and out of hospitals?" And he said, "I've been in and out of hospitals 13 years. And the pastor said with astonishment, he said, "And you think that's fair?" And the boy replied, "Well, God has all eternity to make it up to me." Perspective. And he will. God promises a time when there will be no more crying. He promises there will be no more tears, no more pain, no more suffering. A time when we will be reunited with God in perfect harmony forever. Let the words of 1 Corinthians chapter 2, verse 9 soak into your soul and minister to your heart this morning. Paul said, "No eye has seen, no ear has heard, no mind has conceived what God has prepared for those who love him." It's absolutely breathtaking. Finally, last thing, we wrap this up this morning. We can decide whether to turn bitter or to turn to God for peace and courage. Which way are you going to turn? Are you going to be bitter? Are you going to get better? Are you going to turn to God for peace and courage? We've all seen examples of how the same kind of suffering can happen to two different people, and yet one person turns bitter. They turn away from God. They become hard. They become angry. They become sullen. And then they can cause other people to be miserable in their surrounding. But then we've seen other people who turn to God, and they become more gentle, and they become more loving, and they become more tender. They become more compassionate. They're willing to reach out and help others who are in the same kind of pain. Some who lose a child to a drunk driver can turn inward toward chronic rage and never-ending despair, while someone else can turn outward and help others by starting an organization like Mothers Against Drunk Drivers. We all face adversity. We all face tragedy. But we can make the choice whether we run away from God or run to God. The choice is yours. All our choices have consequences. I started this morning with part of what Jesus said in John 16, 33. But I want to look at the entire verse, okay? So look at all of John 16, 33. It says this, "I have told you these things so that in me you may have peace. You will have suffering in this world. Be courageous. I've conquered the world." Until you know Jesus Christ, this passage means absolutely nothing to you. I understand that. But for those of us who have accepted Christ as Lord and Savior, this passage is so encouraging. In other words, the power of God through the person of Christ offers us two things we need most when we're hurting, and that's peace to deal with our present condition and courage to face the future. How? Because according to that verse, he's conquered the world. Through his suffering and death, he has deprived this world of its ultimate power over you. Suffering doesn't have the last word anymore. Death doesn't have the last word anymore. Jesus is the last word. He is the Alpha and he is the Omega. So let me finish the story of Lee and Leslie as they drove through that storm in Wisconsin. They were following the taillights of that truck when the fog slowly began to lift. The rain began to let up. They entered into a little town with some lights. Things started to become clearer to them. They could start to see better. As they rounded a curve, guess what they saw silhouetted against the night sky? They saw a little steeple. And on top of that steeple was the cross of Christ. After driving through the confusion of the fog for so long, that image struck them in a very poignant way. They followed some points of light that led them to a cross that ironically symbolizes the victory of Jesus and the victory of those who follow him. Christian philosopher Peter Kraft explains that God's ultimate answer to suffering isn't an explanation, it's the incarnation. Suffering's a personal problem. It demands a personal response. And God isn't some distant, detached, and disinterested deity. He entered into our world and personally experienced our pain. And he did it for me, and he did it for you. Jesus is there in the lowest places of our lives. If you're broken, remember he was broken. If you're despised, remember he was despised. If you cry and you can't take it anymore, remember he was a man of sorrows. As someone betrayed you, he was rejected. From the depths of the Nazi death camp, Corrie ten Boom wrote these words, "No matter how deep our darkness, he is deeper still." Dr. Kraft goes on to say that it's not just that God knows and sympathizes with you in your troubles. After all, any close friend can do that. Any close friend can sit beside you, hold your hand, comfort you, and empathize with you. But Jesus is much closer than your closest friend. If you put your trust in him, then he's in you. Therefore, your sufferings are his sufferings. Your sorrows are his sorrows. One of the best verses that you can memorize is 1 John 5:13. "I write these things to you who believe in the name of the Son of God, so that you may know that you have eternal life." God doesn't want us wondering. He doesn't want you steeped in doubt and anxiety over your status for eternity. He says you can know for sure. Don't rely on the fact that you come to church. Don't rely on the fact that you've gone through some sort of religious ritual in the past. The Bible's clear. We can be religious, but not be in a loving relationship with God. You can attend church. You can get dunked underwater. You can eat the bread and the juice. You can hang out with a bunch of Christians. But that doesn't matter if you've not entered into a real relationship with God's one and only Son. God's grace to help you walk faithfully every day comes through you building a relationship with Jesus Christ. That's how you experience God's peace and God's assurance. So settle it now. Resolve it today. Don't wait. If you're experiencing pain or hurt right now, wouldn't it be nice to just turn that over to God? Ask God to use your suffering to bring you closer to him. Or even if tragedy, you know, were to take your life this very day, God can offer you the confidence that what will immediately come next is actually the very best thing of all. I want to be clear that accepting Jesus doesn't take away pain, but it does give us a hope in the midst of that pain. Where's your hope?